Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Welcome to the Fandrax Toolshed. If you love Dynasty Leagues and prospects, you came to the right place, because that's what this show is all about. Covering the majors and all levels of the minor leagues to give you the leg up in your Dynasty Leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 59 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another fun episode in store for you today, and with me, as always, my partner in crime, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, are you a little nervous that we're recording during Game 6? What are your feelings right now about this game?
Yeah, I mean, stomach's in a little bit of knots right now, a little nervous watching it. We've
watched through the first two innings before we hit the record button. We probably would have never started recording, honestly. So we just had to hit record and do it. But yeah, nervous is an understatement. You know, I'm hoping they can finish it off and bring the title home for the first time since 95.
Yeah, and this is your first World Series for the Braves, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was 1 year old when they last won, but don't remember it.
Yeah, every time Sox are in the World Series, it's nerve-wracking. It's obviously you love having your team in these situations, but at the same time, it's like, this is not good for my health.
No. Yeah, I'll be happy when it's over, when it's all said and done. I can focus back on fantasy stuff and not just rest 24/7.
Hopefully with a World Series title.
I hope so.
Going back to Atlanta. Are you going to go to the parade if that happens?
Yeah, I think I have to. You know, went to the game on Friday, which was pretty sweet. Got to win, so got to go back for the parade. That'd be awesome.
For sure. A buddy of mine and I, we went down to the parade after the 2013 World Series. And that one was kind of special too, because that was the year, you know, the marathon bombings in the start of the year, you know, this is our city, Boston strong kind of thing. So that was a really kind of a special year, start to finish in Boston. So going to that parade, I was 23 at the time. Drove down with a buddy. That was a blast. So hopefully I'm rooting for the Braves as well here. Hopefully they can take it. Max Fried out here pumping 98 with a swollen ankle, probably, after getting stepped
half
on.
Half of an ankle, on his push-off foot. That's ridiculous.
Got all that adrenaline coursing through him. They'll pump a 98 right now in the first couple of innings. So 0-0 right now. We're top of the third. So we'll see what the game's at. Then we finish recording, we'll probably just keep on going and watch the rest of it after this. But we do have a show to do here. Before we get into this week's episode, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FantraxToolshed, for extra content from both of us. And, of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our other podcasts, SB Streamer, Fantasy Hockey Life, Fantasy Football Addicts, Define Fantasy Football, and Fantasy Football POV. Let's get right into this week's episode, and we get a little bit of a kind of a hodgepodge. We don't have like one set topic this week, but we are going to discuss some Houston and Atlanta players and where they might be dynasty wise and value wise going into next season. If you're going to be fitting with the World Series going on right now, maybe it's over by the time you listen to this, but as of right now, still in game six here. So we'll talk some Houston Astros to start, then get into some Atlanta players after the break. And then finish with our listener mailbag. We put out a tweet earlier, got a bunch of good questions. We'll get through as many as we can. Don't know if we can get through them all. If not, we'll get to the rest of them on Twitter for sure. Let's start with the Houston Astros here, and a player that we kind of both were just saying that we don't really like that much. And I think the consensus is that most people don't like this player, but Alex Bregman is having a really rough World Series. I think he's hitting like 2 for 20 or something like that right now. Coming off another kind of so-so year, 270, 355, 422 slash line, 12 home runs, 55 RBI, and 54 runs in 91 games. So like right around the 21, 22 homer, 100 and 100 pace. But still, and then 2020 has had a down year as well, 242 average. Hasn't really been great since 2019. So I guess the question is, Chris, what can we expect from Bregman moving forward? Like, do you think there's a chance we see anything close to 2018, 2019 levels again, or is he kind of like a rung or two below that? Like, still a good player, obviously, but just not an elite, like top 30 option.
Yeah, I think he's going to be overrated again. Like, I thought last year or prior to 2021 was the year to draft him. I thought he was a good value, and it really didn't work out. Honestly, like, I still think he's going to go top 50. I think there's a lot of name value there, and I just can't get on board with that. I know third base is just really, really shallow, but even still, I don't know. I'm just not on board with drafting him next year. And for dynasty, like, if you can get something for the name value, I probably would. Everyone's going to want to go back to that 2019 season. Obviously had an awesome year that year when he hit 41 home runs and had a 296 average. A 423 OBP was stellar. And then his runs and RBI total was insane with 122 runs and 112 RBI. And he's going to have a lot of counting stats because he's in this good Houston lineup. I don't know what it'll look like next year. I mean, I know Correa is a free agent. I think Brantley's a free agent too, unless I'm mistaken.
I think he has an option. Yeah, I think he's probably going to
be gone from the looks of it.
Yeah, so, you know, I would guess Correa is gone. They'll still have Altuve and Tucker and Yordan. So there's still a lot of talent in the lineup, you know, even past this year. So no questioning that. But you even look, though, the counting stats this year, he was on pace for 100-100. But I don't know. I just don't think the power is legit. I think he's a solid play in OBP leagues. But from a power standpoint, I don't think he ever repeats that. Like, I think he's hard-pressed to hit 30 home runs again. I think he's more like a 20 home run bat, which – or not 25. Like a 25 home run bat. I think 20 is probably the lower end. 25 is reasonable. But you look, and he just doesn't hit the ball that hard. And even in the 2019 season, hard hit rate of only 38%. The average exit velocity that year was only 89.3 miles an hour. His max EV for his career is 107.6, and that's just really low. That just doesn't scream good raw power by any means.
Right.
The biggest thing that we saw that year, the 2019 season, was just the high launch angle at 19.6%. So naturally, he had a higher home run to fly ball rate, hit more fly balls. But I don't know. I mean, he's tough to value moving forward. For OBP, I think he's a little easier to hold on to. But yeah, for a 5x5 league and for a redraft next year, like, not really in on him.
Yeah, I'm not either. I had him sixth in my third base rankings that is published over on our Patreon a couple of days ago, and I didn't like it. Like, I couldn't put him any lower because below that there's guys with even more question marks or, you know, lesser skills. The guys like, you know, Chris Bryant, Yoan Moncada, those types of guys that are in that tier right behind him. I had him as like the last guy in tier two, along with Nolan Arenado and Austin Riley, who I'd rather have, but. I'm not going to go anywhere near him in his ADP. And I just pulled up Fantrax ADP for all the early drafts we've had, which has been, at this point, looks like at least like 10 or 12 drafts. His ADP is 52.7 right now. So, yeah, right around top 50. I'm not going there. If he fell to like 60, you know, 70-ish, 70, I think is a good spot for him. I might be on board there. But, yeah, I'm not. Even with the Crawford, you figured this would be a guy that would have more home runs with the Crawford boxes, and all of his home runs were pulled this year. Every single one of them were pulled into the Crawford boxes. So I think that definitely helps. I wonder, in a, you know, a stadium that doesn't have the Crawford boxes, what would his home run totals have looked like? As I look here at, yeah, he would have had like 8 home runs in Los Angeles, 4 in Kansas City, 6 in Colorado, 7 if he played for Atlanta. 6 in Milwaukee. Some were actually higher, but yeah, definitely his pull happy profile. Like, the approach is still great. Like, I think he's one of the best plate approaches in baseball. You know, walk rate's been above 10% each of the last 4 years. K rate's been right in that 12, 13, 14% range. But yeah, like you mentioned, Chris, like, all the quality of contact metrics just have not been good. They've been like okay, middle of the road. Like, it's all like, you look at the sliders, is like 43rd percentile, 49th percentile. You know, hard hit rate is only 33rd percentile with that lower max exit velocity that you mentioned. And even like that 41 homer year, his X slug was only 448. It kind of just doesn't add up for the 41 homer season, but that 19 degree launch angle definitely helps. So doesn't barrel the ball well. Yeah, I'm kind of on pace right where you are with, 20 to 25 homers, good counting stats, doesn't bring any speed anymore. Top 75 player, sure. Top 50 or higher, I am not going anywhere near that.
I just don't see when you look at third base, like, why would you not just take Chris Bryant, who has a ton of position flexibility,
right?
And he gives you steals, and I think they're going to have similar power and batting average. So I think Bregman probably beats him out and runs an RBI. But, you know, if you're going to get Bryant later, I don't see any reason not to take him over Bregman.
Exactly. And Bryant, I had 7th in my rankings, and it's part of his ADP. 94 or 95. So he's going 43 picks later. So, you know, 3 or 4 rounds, depending on 12 or 15 teamers. So I would definitely, there's not a 3 or 4 round gap between these two. No way. So 2022. Yeah, definitely Bryant over Bregman. I think it's close in general. Then you factor in their ADPs of each of these guys. It's Chris Bryant without question. Moving over to the other player on the left side of this Houston infield, Carlos Correa. Contract year, had a, you know, basically his best year and his healthiest year he's had in a while. Had the second most games played of his career this year with 148. Only the time he eclipsed 140 was back in 2016 when he kind of broke out there. This year, 279, 366, 485 slash 26 home runs, 92 RBI, 104 runs in 640 plate appearances. I'm wondering, because he's another one that can't stay healthy. The speed has all but evaporated since his first 2 years. He had 27 combined, and since then he had 6 combined and had none since 2019 in 206 games combined. So can't factor in speed anymore. Average is probably, you know, 270-ish every year. He's kind of settled in that range. Solid OBP as well. He's kind of like similar to, I think, to Bregman, but maybe a little less, you know, run score production, like 25 homer bat or so, solid runs in RBI with a 270-ish average, which is basically what Bregman is, but doesn't have the speed, and who knows where he ends up. And if this contract year, he seems like a guy that would be like big contract year, get the big contract, and then not do anything else. So I'd be selling high personally in dynasty leagues. There was a lot of people that didn't like where I had him in my dynasty rankings. They thought I had him too low. Even I still have him like, I think in the 60s, but in terms of where I had him in shortstops only. So I think everyone's perceived value of Correa is higher than what he actually can produce going forward. And yeah, it depends on where he ends up, obviously. But at this point, I would be selling high right now because this might be the highest his value will be for the next few years. But what are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, yeah, I think naturally, because I can't project him to play this much again. I can't project him for 640 plate appearances again, you know? And right. Where does he end up? Like, it's almost a guarantee that his lineup context gets worse. Like, I feel like there's a 90% chance he leaves Houston, which means there's a strong chance of this lineup. In like New York, maybe, but I don't see him going to New York, honestly.
Yeah, unless he goes to like one of like two or three teams. Unless he goes to like Toronto, which wouldn't make sense. Or Boston doesn't fit, or the Yankees. Like, yeah, unless he goes to the Yankees, that's like his one chance, I think, of or the Dodgers. But like, yeah, it's slim.
Yeah, I see him in Detroit, which is not a good line of context and not a good part.
I've heard Detroit too. I've heard some Detroit rumblings too.
Yep. So I don't know,
but
yeah, you saw what that did. I mean, he had a ton of doubles. You saw what that did, Nicholas Castellanos. You know, I mean, he was a doubles machine there. Right. So I don't know. I'm not really a fan of drafting him next year, and in dynasty, I think he has a prime chance to sell high. I mean, you can look under the hood. I mean, he has a 293 XBA, which was pretty dang impressive, actually, 96th percentile there. But I mean, even the max exit velocity, 116, was at the top of the league. He does a lot of things well. I think there's reason to sell high because of the solid year. I think all the underlying metrics support what he did, but there's too risky because of injuries and the potential to leave Houston and getting that, you know, lineup context that could not be nearly as good. So, yeah, for those reasons, I'm selling high in Dynasty. I don't know where his ADP ends up in redraft, but most likely avoiding. Where's he at currently?
He is at 72.
Yeah, I think that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. But I feel like for Dynasty purposes, I think his value, like people perceive him as like a top 50-ish guy, and I don't think he's there. Like I said, the speed isn't there. I don't think he's going to be like over 30 home runs, over 100 RBI. He hasn't even cracked 30 in a healthy year yet. So, and the fact that he's never healthy, like we both mentioned, right. Even though the last 2 years, you know, he played 58 games last year, all but 2 games, you know, 148 this year. So it's been better lately, but yeah, he's just one I'm always worried about, just, you know, breaking down a couple IL stints every year for, you know, it's always like the quad and the hamstring, those types of things. So all those things that tend to recur more often than not. So yeah, I'm kind of staying away from, I don't think any shares of Correa in any of my leagues. I didn't have any of him this year in redraft. I don't have any in dynasty, I don't think. So he's one, I used to be really high. I was a huge Craig guy, and people that have been following my work since, you know, for the last few years probably remember that 2017, 2018 or so, I had him like top 15 dynasty. But I'm not out, but I'm just at his price tag. I'm not a Correa guy anymore.
Wasn't he like top 5 pick after that rookie year that he popped off?
Probably, or at least top 10. Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, it would have been after that second year, I think. When he had like, it was like 26-13 with a bunch of counting stats.
Yeah.
I think everyone thought like that third year he was to take that step, be like a 30-20 type of guy. And it just never happened. That was kind of like the start of the downfall.
Yeah. You had a lot of Astros that did this and stopped running. Like, you know, Springer.
I know.
Springer was a stolen base monster and has stopped running. And, you know, Altuve doesn't run. Obviously, Altuve's is age related. You know, it's interesting. I didn't realize Correa is only 26. He debuted so young.
He did. He debuted at 20, I think.
Yeah, he's actually 20. He just turned 27 at the end of the year, but next year will be his age 27 season. So, Yeah, yeah. That's kind of crazy. You always just, I guess, because he's been around so long. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, I would recommend sailing high if possible.
Absolutely agree. Moving on to two younger guys that I think we're both very excited about. Let's start with Yordan Alvarez, who was cooking until this World Series. We saw he's now 1-for-17 in the World Series. Though he's drawn like 6 or 7 walks, so the OBP is still like 400 or close to it. But Yordan had a very good year. I think he erased a lot of the concerns people had about the knees. Played 144 games, 598 plate appearances, 277, 346, 531 slash, 33 home runs, 35 doubles, 104 RBI, and 92 runs scored. And both you and I, like, we put out some tweets around the same time that you look at the underlying metrics for Yordan and put him up against Vladimir Guerrero Jr., they're not far off. So I guess my question for you, Chris, do you think that Yordan can make a Vlad-like leap this upcoming year and be, you know, like a top 10 guy?
Possibly, but I don't think he has the power of Vlad. Like, I don't see him getting to those kind of numbers. But last year, still 2021 season, technically. And then 2021 season, only one hitter had a zone contact rate higher than 90%, a hard hit rate above 45%. And that was Yordan, who had a 91.1% zone contact rate and a 54.2% hard hit rate, which was phenomenal. And I put out there that he was a top 5 hitter in baseball. I'm not talking about for fantasy, but for real baseball. And people like lost their minds over it. Like, I'm not really sure why, because the contact skills are elite and the power is real. Like, he does so many things well, and you just sit there and you wonder, like...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
How good can he be? And you look at his spray chart, and he hits to all fields well, too, which is awesome.
Yep.
I mean, I know he's a DH, but he showed that he could play the field. Like, he played the last 3 games in Atlanta in the field. Maybe not elite, but he did. And, you know, once the universal DH comes next year, we assume then, you know, he's going to DH all the time and be fine, which kind of sucks for fantasy purposes, but he will have outfield eligibility next year, which is huge. And you just look, I mean, I say that he can't get to Vlad's power, but his average exit velocity, 93.2 miles an hour, top of the league. His max EV at 116 is elite as well. And he's got a great launch angle. So, you know, I really don't see why not. I think he can be a 300 hitter. So,
yeah, I in my tweet that I put out, I ended with, would I take Vlad in 2022? Yes. But I think these two are going to be very close. And, you know, some of the numbers I put up there, hard hit rate. So every number else, I'll say Vlad first, then Yordan. Hard hit rate, 55.2, 54.2. Barrel, 15.1, 15.9. Average exit velo, 95.1, 93.2. Max, 117.4, 116.4. X Wobicon went to Yordan by 26 points. X Slug was Vlad by 22 points. So, you know, they're all kind of like in the same ballpark. Yordan bested him in a couple. Vlad got him in a few as well. But yeah, maybe he won't get up to, what did Vlad have, 48 home runs this year, I think it was, or something like that. I don't see.
Yeah, 48.
Yeah, I don't see Yordan getting up there, but I could see Yordan hitting 40. I could see him being maybe like 5 home runs or so behind with a similar average, maybe, you know, 10 to 15 points behind an average. But yeah, I think it's going to be close. I think he could be a borderline top 10 guy moving forward in 2022 and beyond, because, you know, and we've seen what it takes to be a top 10 guy without having any speed. You got to be Nolan Arenado, basically. So like 40 home runs, bunch of counting stats, hitting near 300. I think Yordan can definitely do that. You mentioned all the contact skills that he has, the quality of contact is there. Yeah, I think it's going to be a real big season for him next year, even bigger than this year. I'd say like 40, 110, 100 runs, 285, 290 or something like that, 360 or so OBP. I think it's going to be a nice step forward for Yordan next year. Same thing I think could be said for this guy, who led the American League in a lot of categories after May 1st, Kyle Tucker. He led the American League in average, on base, was, I think, yeah, slugging as well, WOBA and WRC plus after May 1st. He was better than Vlad outside of, you know, home runs and RBIs from May 1st on. Tucker finished with a 294, 359, 557 slash, 30 home runs, 14 steals, 92 RBI, 83 runs in just 140 games. So almost like a 35-18 type of pace, 90 runs, 100 RBI. I think, and that was all hitting like 6th or 7th. Like, I think 80%+ of his at-bats came out of the 6th or 7th spot in the lineup. You got to figure with Correa gone, Brantley probably gone, you know, he's another year older, so Dusty will like him a little more. You figure he moves up to at least 5th or 4th or 3rd in the order, one of those spots. So I think it's going to be a huge, huge year for Kyle Tucker. He was one of the few guys that had, you know, an XBA over 300 and an X-Slug over 550. There was only a handful of those guys, guys like Soto, those types of guys. Freeman was another. So, yeah, it's all there for Kyle Tucker, and I hope the speed doesn't fall off for him like it has with other Houston guys that you mentioned, Chris. But, yeah, I think there's a chance of a 35-20 season next year, hitting 300 with 200 plus runs in RBI. I think he could be a top five player in 2022. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, if you're listening, Jake Devereaux, I just want you to remember in the 2020 season when I, on the Five Tool Pod, when I said you should buy low on him, and look at him now, baby.
Trust me, I have not let Jake forget that.
Jake
knows.
Yeah. And you have to guess, like, how many, I mean, Steamer projects him for 616 plate appearances next year. And you look, and almost all of his plate, so he had 250 out of the six hole and 147 out of the seven hole. So, you know, 400 of those plate appearances this year were in the six or seven spot. He's like a two. He's like a perfect two in that lineup. And yeah. So maybe if Brantley's not there, Brantley doesn't resign, and if Correa goes, he's hitting behind Altuve. That's a pretty good spot to hit, especially if you've got, you know, Jordan behind you. So that's an attractive spot. And I think those counting stats really tick up, even though this year you still saw he had 83 runs and 92 RBI. No reason he can't go 100-100 next year. I mean, he played 140 games. I think he easily bumps up to 640 plate appearances or more. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on board all day. You look, 30 home runs this year with just 567, 14 stolen bases, same number, you know. So I think that could tick up. The batting average definitely improved. And he made tangible changes too. Like, you know, and a lot of people's knock was that he couldn't hit breaking balls. And he totally improved against those. Off-speed pitches, hit 311 against him this year. You know, what's interesting though is he hit 236 against breaking balls, which was obviously improved from the last 2 years. But his XBA against him this year was 279. So, great fastball hitter. I'm a big fan. I mean, he really didn't whiff that much against breaking balls in consideration, comparison to the past especially. Like, he made a lot of improvements. And, yeah, he's kind of unorthodox at the plate. He runs kind of funky, but it works. I mean, shoot, he gets the job done. He's got the sprint speed. It's good enough to steal 10 bags. He's got the power. So now that the hit tools came along, I'm all on board.
Obviously, I am as well. Everyone should know that. I love Kyle Tucker. Like I said, he checks off all the boxes. He's consistently improved his approach. Like this year, career best walk rate, tied for a career best strikeout rate, 18.1%. That was down from 21.8 last year and 23.4 the year before that. Just consistently gotten better at the plate. The power has come along. So he doesn't really have any struggles against any pitch type. When 258 is your worst batting average against one of the three pitched classifications, that's pretty damn good there. Doesn't have the high whiff rates at all. Contact rates are good. Yeah, everything's in place for a huge season from Tucker. I just hope he continues to run. He should move up. And then you add in a good 60, 70, 80 more plate appearances to what he already did this year. I'm salivating at what Kyle Tucker could do next year. When in that mock draft, everyone remembers that mock draft we did a few weeks ago, the first two-round mock, Casey Bubba took Tucker 6th overall. Love it. I love Kyle Tucker. Looking at just outfielders in general next year, I think the only ones I would 100% take over him are Juan Soto, Tatis, if he's eligible there in your league, and if Acuna's healthy. I think Tucker's, you know, Bryce Harper's right there with Tucker in my rankings, but yeah, I think he's going to be top 5 outfielder, top 10 player next year for sure. Yeah, so definitely all in on Tucker. He is the real deal. One last Houston Astro here. Moving over to the pitching side of things. And we've already talked to Luis Garcia. We talked about him, I think, last week with Brendan Tuma in our rookie review episode. Moving over to Lance McCullers Jr. here, who was dealing with an injury. Very talented arm. I think there's no doubting the talent here. But just where, you know, how we value him moving forward with the injury he currently has. And it's not like this is the first injury he's had. He's dealt with injuries throughout his career. But where do you think, you know, he has a flexor pronator muscle, a strained flexor pronator muscle in the right forearm. We all know we put the word strain and forearm in the same sentence. That's usually, you know, murky waters there. It might lead to Tommy John surgery, which has not been said, but you never know with these types of injuries. So, Chris, how are you valuing Lance McCullers Jr. this year or moving forward? 3.16 ERA, you know, good strikeout rate. Walk rate's always been kind of weird, but or high, I should say. But how are you valuing him moving forward?
Man, that's so tough because he was so good this year. And, like, obviously, like, I really wanted to buy in for next year, but this injury makes it kind of murky. Like, I don't really know. Obviously, he hadn't been available to pitch in for the postseason. I know he pitched a little bit in the first round, I think, but I don't know. I mean, 162 innings this year was great. 10 more in the postseason, which was, you know, I think more than most people projected. And that's pretty solid in today's environment. So if he was healthy, you look and you might could project him for like 175, which would be huge. But right now it's kind of hard to project anything on him because, you know, what is the final outcome of all this? You know, I don't really know. And that's the tough thing. So I really have no clue what to do with him because, you know, it was first, maybe he'll pitch again in the postseason and then going to miss the ALCS, maybe pitch in the World Series and going to miss the World Series. So how long does this keep going on? Do they try to ride it out all offseason? And then does he get TJ like in the spring? You know, that's highly possible that happens. So, man, I don't know. Like, I've always been a McCullers guy. Had him on a lot of teams this year. I'd love to have him again next year. But I just can't really get myself to buy in. And in Dynasty, you're going to have a hard time getting someone to buy him right now. But you looked last year, there was only four pitchers in baseball that had a strikeout rate over 25% and a ground ball rate above 50%. And he was one of those, the others being Logan Webb, Ranger Suarez, which is interesting, and Alex Wood, also interesting. So good combo there of strikeouts and ground balls, which, you know, I really like. But, man, I just want to know that he's healthy. Like, it's probably a situation where I don't really draft him until I see him healthy in the spring. Even still, that's going to be concerning. Like, what if he throws some in the spring and then ends up having to get surgery for the season? I don't know, man. It's a tough spot to be.
Yeah, it's risky for sure. I've always been intrigued by him because the stuff is there. And, you know, sinker curveball mix mostly. Added that slider this year, which was very, very good. 150 batting average against, 244 slug, 35.9% whiff rate. Had three offerings, well, technically four if you add the cutter, but he only threw that 40 times for a 1.4% usage rate. So I'm not really counting that. But for pitches, he actually threw three offerings with a right around 36 to 38% whiff rate. Not many pitchers in baseball can say that. Yeah, the sinker got hit a bit hard, 293 batting average against, 476 slug. So that pitch does need to improve, more so his location of the pitch. But yeah, the three secondaries, slider, curve, changeup, all very good. But then again, the walk rate, like I mentioned, was high, 11.1%. Not like deathly high, but that's not great either. All of his, you know, the ERA indicators kind of were 0.3 to 0.5 higher than his 3.16 ERA. So yeah, he's a hard one to value. Actually, I don't have many shares of him, but I guess if I did, I'd kind of hold right now. Unless you can get someone's not scared away by the injury, I'd be okay trading him. But that's, you know, if not, I'd probably hold. That's a wrap up Houston, though. We'll go take a quick break here, come back on the other side, and get into Chris's Atlanta Braves, who currently are up 3-0 in the bottom of the third. So don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back from the break. Talking some Atlanta Braves, some Houston Astros here as the World Series goes on next to us in Game 6. Atlanta currently up 3-0, bottom three. Let's get into the Atlanta Braves now. We have a few players to talk about. Then we'll get into our listener mailbag question for the last 20 minutes or so of the show. Let's start with a couple pitchers. Let's start with the guy that's on the hill tonight. Max Fried, kind of an up and down year, but more so up, but started off kind of a little rocky, but really kind of got better as the season went on. Finished with a 3.04 ERA in 165 and two thirds innings, 109 whip, FIP was 3.31. All the ERA indicators are pretty solid as well. Still, you know, a little under a strikeout per inning, 158 strikeouts and 165 and two thirds innings. But outside of that, you know, this is a guy that's been really good ratios the last couple of years. ERA under three combined over the last 2 years, which is 39 starts for him. So where do you have Fried moving forward, Chris? Do you think he can get to that, you know, kind of back end ace level, or is he more like a solid number two for you moving forward?
Yeah, I think he stays that number two range just because of the strikeouts. Even though, you know, he was super elite in the second half, he had a 4.71 ERA in the first half. And then the second half in 93 innings, a 1.74 ERA. So he just really turned it on. But even still, he only struck out 86 batters in those 93 innings. It's tough because I don't really see the strikeouts ticking up. I mean, shoot, if he keeps pumping the fastball like he is tonight, then, yeah, then right. Maybe because he's out pumping 97, 98. Average 94 this year. His fastball velo has increased pretty steadily each year, which is definitely encouraging. You know, it's not something that's guaranteed to take another step forward next year, but you know, you do like to see that continually trending upwards. And I think he's just he's got the well-rounded arsenal and he gets the job done. And I think people were ready to drop him after the rough start, but what he does well is limits hard contact. He limits hard contact. He generates ground balls, and then it makes up for the lack of whiffs, in my opinion. And he strikes out enough guys to be a solid fantasy starter, but he's never going to reach the ace level. Like, I just don't see the whiff rate ticking up. I don't see really anything in the profile suggesting that the strikeouts get better, but could be wrong. I mean, he could benefit from some more called strikes maybe, and that happened, but even still, his CSW is just 28% this year, which is little below average, but that's fine. I mean, it plays. I mean, he just controls contact well enough to be a solid starter. The command got better this year, in my opinion. He walked less guys. He was commanding, and especially in the second half, he commanded the pitches a lot better. So all these factors kind of played in, and you know, maybe he gets up to a 25% K rate. I think that could be solid, but you know, even without, if he sticks at 23.5%. And he pitches to a mid 3 ERA, I think that's a solid number two type guy.
Yeah, and I do think there's a little bit more K upside. He's got the two good breaking balls, the curveball, which he threw about 26% of the time, and the slider about 22% of the time. Both have a whiff rate above 30% this year, 30.1 on the slider, 34.8 on the curveball. So, and both had, you know, solid batting average against as well. So I think he can get up 25-26%, probably not more than that. I don't think he's ever like a 28-29% guy. But yeah, 25-26% I think is realistic. And like you mentioned, limits hard contact very well. Everything except for the sinker was under 86 mile an hour average exit velo this year, including the four-seamer, which is 85.7. So yeah, I think definitely a very good number two, a guy that I think you can rely on. Yeah, he had that kind of shaky first half of the year, but you know, overall I think he's a guy you can rely on as a kind of a high floor number two starter. And if you get a guy that's got crazy, you know, strikeouts and is your ace, like a Corbin Burns or Garrett Cole or someone like that, or basically every ace I should say at this point, they all have crazy K rates at this point, but yeah, I'd be fine getting him as my two, a guy that can get me some wins, some quality starts, a decent enough K rate, good ratios to kind of help stabilize those. I'd definitely be okay with him as my two. Real quick, I'll put you on the spot. 2022 and beyond for both. So two-part question. Fried or Logan Webb? Who you got?
Fried. I mean, he's just done it more consistently. I know the consensus will probably be Logan Webb. Like, if you put out a poll, I think the majority of people would say that. But yeah, I just trust Fried more. And I think we've seen the longer track record, him being a solid arm. So it's a pretty easy Fried for me.
All right. And I'm assuming you take Fried over Ian Anderson as well?
Yeah, definitely. I like Anderson, but you know, there's still some holes in this game. So,
yeah. All right, moving over to a pitcher a lot older than Max Fried, a guy that is going to be 38 in about a week and a half. But if you look at his baseball reference page, looks 58, but still pitches like he's 28. That's Charlie Morton, a guy that, you know, unfortunately had the fractured fibula, putting him out of the rest of these playoffs. Obviously, he had surgery on it. Man, what? I think the series would be over if that didn't happen. Like, having him start in game what would he have been in game?
He would have started five.
Yeah. That would have been a huge difference outside of having Tucker Davidson start.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine you go up 4-0 in the first inning and then you have Morton come in and not Tucker Davidson. So, yeah. You know, you're pitching way ahead. Davidson just didn't have it. So, you know, that's killer not having him. So tough, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. But you know, he is coming back next year. He's signed through, he had an extension. So I think he's one more year. I think it was, or two more years.
They extended him for 1 year with an option for 2023.
That's what it was. Okay. So at least one more year. And Morton has just been, you know, not a late career bloomer, though. He did actually kind of was, you know, got good around age 29, 30, then kind of slumped again. But the last few seasons outside of 2020, take away 2020, he's had three straight years under a 3.4 ERA, under a 1.16 whip. The K rate starting in 2016, really started ticking up there. Obviously Dynasty, you know, if you're in a rebuild, you're not even looking at a guy like Charlie Morton. But I think if you're a contender and the team, maybe a team that isn't necessarily a contender in your league or maybe lower than you in the standings has Morton, he's a great trade target just because it won't take more than, you know, a low level or mid level prospect to get him. Probably somebody you won't be too hurt that you're trading away. And I think Morton still got it in there for another year or two of some pretty solid numbers here. Like, he is just he's kind of like, you know, Joey Votto, but on the pitching side of things, is still very good at 37, 38 years old. So I'd be buying him if I could just get him for, you know, a prospect or so. And for next year, yeah, assuming he's fully healthy by opening day, which he should be, assuming nothing was wrong here, I think he can be a nice, you know, high-end SP3. I have him as my number 33 pitcher for next year, three spots behind Max Fried. So what are your thoughts here on Charlie Morton for next year, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. I mean, he showed durability this year. He pitched 185 innings plus 16.2 in the postseason. So he eclipsed 200 innings this year at 37 years old. It's pretty impressive. He's durable. I think, you know, it's funny. We look back to the 2020 season and everybody thought he was going to retire after the rough year, and people kind of wrote him off, and he was just, you know, came back this year. Stellar with Atlanta. I think he has all the tools to get it done. And I think we're seeing more and more pitchers be able to perform at a high level deeper into their career. And I don't know if that's a training regiment type thing that we're seeing breakthroughs in training type things or what it is. But I mean, Morton's got.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A decent amount of mileage on his arm, but it doesn't really matter because he's, you know, still going out there and getting the job done. And we're seeing, I mean, this would have been, I don't know how many he threw in the 2019 postseason, but this was right there with the career high. I mean, it was the second highest regular season innings total. And then, I mean, he threw 194 in 2019. You have to figure pitched in the postseason some, so he probably had more that year. But see these career high innings this late in his career is awesome. And I think he's capable of continuing to do it. And you mentioned in dynasty leagues, like, what's he going to cost you? Like a fringe top 100 prospect? Like, not going to miss out on that. So right. I'm more than open to doing that and making the deal. He limited hard contact pretty well this year. Everything across the board, you look at his Statcast sliders were really good, really red. So it's everything you like to see. And so, yeah, I don't know where his ADP ends up. Obviously out with a broken leg that obviously sucked that we lost him on the World Series, but he'll be back and he'll be ready for spring training. So I think he'll be fine.
As of now, his Whoa. Morton's ADP 63-3. That's higher than I thought it would be.
Dang.
We'll see where that ends up. And then just for, let's look at some of the guys. Freed is 68.4. And Ian Anderson, just to look here, is at, there's too many Andersons here, 126. So, yeah, a good few rounds lower. But, yeah, both these Braves arms here in round, like, five territory in 15 team, which I think is, maybe a little high for my liking, but not too bad. I think that's a solid range for both of them. Moving over to the hitting side of things here, Jorge Soler was an absolute godsend for this Atlanta team midseason after losing several, bats to various reasons. They added him. They added Rosario. They added Jock Pedersen. All three have been, I don't think they're where they are now without all three of these guys coming in and doing what they did. For Soler in particular, hit .269, .358 OBP, .524 slug, with 14 home runs in 242 play appearances after coming over via trade. And this is after a .192, .288, .370 slash in Kansas City. Still had 13 home runs in 360 play appearances, but yeah, he was just absolutely lost. And also, he only hit .228 in 2020. So I think that once you saw what he did in 2020, add in the first half of 2021, you're like, all right, was that 2019 a fluke? And I still don't think he's ever going to get back to that 2019 level, where he had 48 home runs and 117 RBI to go with the .265 average. But I think if he can settle in as like a Franmil Reyes kind of type with a, .250, .260-ish average, maybe a touch lower, .240, .250, but, 35 or so homers annually with some solid counting stats, yeah, I think he can settle in as like a top 125, top 150 option. Right in the similar range to Franmil Reyes. But are you buying, you watch more Braves games than I did this year. Are you buying the resurgence we've seen from Jorge Soler?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're looking at the exact type of hitter he is. He's probably like a 260, 270 hitter that can easily hit 30 home runs. And I'm not – the Braves went up 3-0. You were talking, so I don't know if you saw it, but they went up 3-0 because he hit a three-run homer over the train tracks. Like, it was a monster. Listed at yeah. 446, but that thing went way further than that. I don't really care what they say.
I saw it happen after. I forgot to mention it, but I missed it actually happening.
Yeah. You were talking about somebody. I was like, holy crap, he just tanked that. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but I wonder if him just getting out of Kansas City was a thing for him, and getting on a contending team and made all the difference in the world. So, yeah, I mean, the zone contact solid. His overall contact rate is actually a career best this year. So there's been tangible improvements, and I'd love for the Braves to re-sign him actually as a free agent. So I'd love to see him stick. You could play Acuna in center. You could play him in right. I'd be all for that. So that'd be interesting. I guess a lot depends on the Ozuna situation. Not really sure what ends up happening there, but I could definitely see them making a run to re-sign him. I think he really enjoys being with the team. And again, being in this lineup has been great for him. So yeah, I think if he was being drafted around pick 125 and he had a secure lineup spot on a good team like the Braves, I'd take him.
That's interesting. Let's see where his ADP currently is. Oh, wow. Okay. His ADP is obviously very, very early. It's November 2nd. This is Fantrax ADP we're using here. So NFBC would be different, obviously, but 175. It's a very intriguing spot for him.
Yeah, I'm actually not surprised. I bet it'll go up a little. It'll trend upwards, but I think 150. I wouldn't be surprised. I think maybe people – and well, who knows? I mean, if he wins World Series MVP, if the Braves end up winning it, he's probably going to win MVP. He's got 3 home runs a series. So yeah. That may push the stock up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It usually does. But yeah, you just look at his quality of contact numbers have always been good. Yeah, he set a hard hit rate at 47% or above each of the last 3 years. And kind of sneakily, is that even a word, sneakily?
I don't know. It works.
It is now. I'm making it a word. He's always had, look at his walk rate. Very, very, it's almost like Chris Davis level of consistency. I mean, it's not the same every year, but last 5 years, 10-9, 10-9, 10-8, 10-9, 11-1. Right around 11% every year. And the K rate has dropped this year to 23.6%, which was, I don't know if it's career best, but I don't even have a savant. Metrics for sure to go back to 2015, but it's a career best for him in the savant era of Statcast. So kind of made some quiet improvements at the plate this year to go along with his elite quality of contact metrics, which are always like top 10, top 15% of the league. So yeah, I think that definitely a Franmil Reyes type of profile moving forward is very valid. Last Atlanta player we're going to talk about here, a guy that's having a tough World Series. He had the one big home run, but outside of that, it's been tough at the plate, tough in the field, had a couple errors. Dansby Swanson, overall this year, another guy that had an up and down year, finished 248, 311, 449, but did have 27 home runs, 88 RBI, 78 runs, and 9 steals. You know, look at his underlying metrics. You know, doesn't really have a lot that stands out. He does have an 82nd percentile sprint speed, you know, but all of his quality of contact metrics are like average to slightly above average. Did have a nice 42.7% hard hit rate, but average exit velo 89.3, max only 109.6, which is actually the highest of his career, which is, you know, not great. So I guess the question I have moving forward, especially at this loaded shortstop position, that's just going to keep adding talent, Bobby Witt Jr. And others coming up here in the next couple of years. Is Swanson a viable long-term starter at the position? And, you know, in 12 and 15 teamers, I think he's right in that back end range. Because I think a lot of what he did this year is valid, like 25 to 30 homer bats, you know, solid counting stats in Atlanta's lineup, adding a little bit of speed here. But the average has kind of fluctuated throughout his career. So that's the one thing, the one kind of pause I have with Swanson. But overall, I do like him. So I think he is a solid back end, you know, in that 12 to 15 range. But what do you think, Chris?
Yeah, he just had a fluctuating BABIP his whole career, which is interesting. I mean, That's the biggest thing is BABIP's just all over the board. We've seen it. So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a 300 hitter like we maybe once thought. But I think that, you know, since Steamer projects him at 244, which is strange when you look at his, especially his last 3 years. I know he hit 248 this year, but 244 seems pretty low there. I think he's like a 260 type hitter, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he was in the middle of the breakout in 2019, and he got injured. And it kind of derailed his season. Like, he had 17 home runs at the All-Star break in 2019. So he was well on his way to that career breakout year. Ended up getting hurt, missed some time. And he never came back the same. And, you know, last year was a solid year. I mean, again, he played all 60 games. He hit 10 home runs, stole 5 bases. So, you know, again, he paced there for 27 home runs and, you know, 12 stolen bases. Way to do this year, 27 home runs, 9 stolen bases. The average just dropped down a little bit, but his BABIP was also way down, so at 297. But again, you look at his career BABIP, it's 305, but he's had years where it's, you know, 350. He's had years where it's 297 like this year, 290 in 2018. So hard to project him, honestly. Yeah, I think Steamer's really low on him at 20 home runs and 9 stolen bases in 244. I think he's a viable 15-team league shortstop starter. But shoot, if you want to get him in the middle infield, then perfect, because – I think that he's going to be drafted still later than most. I think shortstop's so deep. I think his ADP's outside the top 100, if I had to guess. Curious where it is now, but I think that's a viable spot.
Well, again, early, but 142.
Okay. I'd say 120. 120 is probably a reasonable spot. But, yeah, I mean, again, he's 27 years old. He's added power throughout his career. He's played. He's durable. And there's a lot of reasons to buy into him, honestly, even though there is some up and downs, like we've seen throughout this season, like he had his highs and he had his lows, but in a roto league, it all balances out. So like, that's totally fine with me.
All right. We're going to play a quick game here of who you got, shortstop edition for just 2022 only. Cause there's some interesting names around him and ADP that are all kind of near him, where I have him as my 14th shortstop for 2022. So let's go. Chris, you got Dansby or Jorge Polanco for 2022?
Oh, that's tough. They're
back to back in my rankings, by the way.
Yeah, I don't buy into Polanco's power as much, which I've seen some people think he's a third rounder, which to me is that's no chance.
No, insane.
Yeah. So in my opinion, you saw Polanco this year. He sold out for power. His batting average tanked. Like, he's always been a batting average type guy. So to me, I'm still leaning Swanson, but I do think it's close. I see them in similar spots.
Yeah, agreed. I have Swanson 14 and Polanco 15, so I will go Swanson as well. A couple more here. You got Swanson or Jake Cronenworth?
Probably Cronenworth, actually, because the flexibility position-wise.
Yeah, that definitely helps. I'll lean Swanson, but it's very close for me. Swanson or Willy Adames?
Adames, just because you look at what he's done his career outside of the Trop and what he did in Milwaukee. I think that he's actually really legit, and I think that he could be a top 10 shortstop, which is crazy.
Agreed. I think he can do what Swanson's doing, but with a higher batting average. So, yeah, I have Adames ahead of Swanson, but his ADP is actually four spots below Swanson so far in early Fantrax drafts for next year. Let's do actually, those are all guys that are really in. How about Swanson or Jazz Chisholm?
Swanson, I think. Well, that's tough. I mean, Jazz power speed's pretty intriguing, but he's so volatile. Man, I have no clue. I don't know. I'm kind of torn there. I probably actually lean Chisholm due to the speed because I think he's 2020, and who knows what kind of batting average he gives you. He might hit higher average than Swanson, but it's hard to know for sure.
Yeah, I know. He's one of the bigger boomer bust players at this position next year. We'll end with a very interesting one here. Last one, because his ADP is currently, I know this will change, but 25 or so spots ahead of Dansby Swanson at ADP 120. You got Swanson or Bobby Witt Jr. for 2022.
Oh, man. That's so
tough, isn't it?
Yeah, because who knows when, like, what are the Royals even going to do with him? Like, when's he going to come up? Like, he should have been up opening day this year.
Yeah. Let's say, you know, similar, you know, timeline to like Jared Kelnick. So, what, like end of April, beginning of May. So, let's say you get 5 months out of Bobby Witt Jr. Who you taking?
Probably Swanson. I mean, yeah, Witt is by and far the more talented player, but I think there's going to be an adjustment period, as we've seen with a lot of prospects. So, I'd probably lean Swanson for redraft. So, that's so tough, though, because Witt could easily be 25-25, and he's got a solid hit tool. But I just think there's going to be an adjustment period that takes a little time.
I think Steamer had him 23-15 or something like that.
They had him something crazy.
I even said it. I think it's possible he goes, you know, like 20-20 this year. But obviously, he's a rookie. Even some of the top rookies have struggled. So,
yeah. I would take 267, okay. And you're right, 23-17.
Okay, which I think is realistic. I would not be surprised if he did that, but I don't know. I'm trying to shift away from that type of like, oh, go for the flash. Obviously, Witt's the flashy, right? Swanson is like a let's compare to cars here. Swanson's like a I'll use my own car. He's like a Honda Civic, really good car, reliable, you know, above average car. But Witt's like, you know, not a Rolls Royce, but like a BMW or something. He's definitely the more flashy. You see it drive by, like you see me drive by my Honda, see someone else drive by the BMW. You're looking at the BMW, right? I know that. So obviously the flashier, the sexier pick would be Witt. But yeah, I'll go Swanson's. I think he's a safer bet to return top 100 value next year than Bobby Witt. Obviously, long term, it's Witt by a mile. But yeah, I'll go Witt Swanson's for 2022. Let's move over to our last segment here, our listener questions. Chris, you wanna read these off here?
Yeah, definitely. So the first one's actually from a member of our Patreon, the Fantrax Toolshed Patreon, Mike McLeod. He asked, how should we value Heston Kerstad moving forward? And we know that Kerstad's obviously gone through a lot of stuff off the field, which has been detrimental to him with heart issues. He had some heart inflammation issues, and that flared back up in June, which pretty much derailed any chance of him playing this year. He is participating in fall instructs, which is encouraging. Obviously, really haven't heard how he's doing there or even if he's actually started, but he did take part in instructional ball. So hopefully that's a big thing for him moving forward. These conditions like this are, man, it's so tough to see in players. And we saw, obviously, and his Oriole teammate, Trey Mancini, with cancer and now with Kerstad dealing with a heart issue, it's really tough. And so how are we valuing Heston Kerstad? What are your thoughts?
It's hard. You know, the heart issues, that's so – like Erod had some heart issues. It's so hard to really, you know, find a value for him, you know, with that going on. But if you just look at the skills, which – you know, obviously haven't really changed since he was drafted, you know, around a 50 hit tool plus power potential, you know, maybe a little bit of speed, you know, adding in like 5 to 8 steals a year. So I think he can be like a 260, 270-ish hitter with 30 plus home runs and a handful of steals sprinkled in if everything clicks. And I have, you know, I have faith in the Baltimore Orioles player development. And you've seen a lot of these guys on the rise. And I think it was either Baseball America or MLB Pipeline, I forget which one, had them as the best farm system in baseball, which I don't quite agree with. But I think they're no doubt top 10, maybe even top 5 right now. So definitely a good system to be in, especially on the hitting side of things. So he's a guy that I would buy, because I think maybe people have not necessarily forgotten about him, but I think he's kind of just kind of fallen off the radar a bit because he hasn't really played. So I would definitely try to buy low on him. So I have him as my number 163 in my prospect rankings, but I think he could, you know, if he comes back next year and shows that, you know, what he showed coming out of Arkansas into the draft, I think he could be a top 100 guy easily. So a nice buy right now in dynasty leagues for me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that statement. I think that the value is tanked, and you know, I think you're right in the aspect of people just haven't thought about him much because he hasn't been playing. So that gives you a good buying opportunity. He was in the middle of a breakout season in 2020 at Arkansas before the shutdown happened. I don't think anyone expected him to go as high as he did in the draft when Baltimore took him number 2, but you know, that was the surprise of that draft. And I think that he gets back there. I mean, I think Baltimore can continue to develop him. So he played the highest competition, the level of competition in the SEC. So I'm on board. And I think that, yeah, I probably wasn't as high on him as most like at one point, but I think now creates a good buy opportunity, even with some questions. So I think it's encouraging to hear that he's participating in instructs. I think that's a big step forward, because this has been a year now that he dealt with this. This was last November that he dealt first with the heart issues. And so, man, it's been tough to see. And so hopefully he bounces back. Now, this one's a fun one. This one's from Beck, also in our Discord Patreon member. He said, which prospects outside of the top 100 to 150 could make big jumps next year? Like, I guess he also mentioned, like, from an upside standpoint, like, which prospects that are not in our top 100, 150 range have the most upside that could really make a jump, you know, way up boards next season, which is a fun question.
It definitely is. I was just going through my rankings here, and I got several. We don't have to go like super, super deep into these, but just some names I have checked off here. I'll start the highest ones I have. I think all the Cleveland guys, Cleveland arms, are going to keep rising. Guys like Peyton Battenfield, Logan T. Allen. I think Evan Williams will be a big riser next year once he gets in the game action. So all on board on that train. Matt Allen, I think once he gets back from injury, he's a guy that's just, you know, I think he would have been like maybe he could be a top 50 prospect if he didn't get hurt. So another name that is, I think, going to be a big riser next year. Some other names I have checked off here. I'm a big James Wood guy. I know he's very boomer bust, but he's a, you know, LeBron sized outfielder with power and speed. We'll see how the hit tool comes along. Jose Salas, very high on him, middle infielder from the Miami Marlins. Nice little power speed blend, solid hit tool as well. Lonnie White Jr., super toolsy Pittsburgh outfielder from this past draft. I think he could be a big riser if he shows well in his first year. The guy from your Atlanta Braves, Vaughn Grissom, I think is going to be a hot name in 2022. And he just went top 100 overall in my P1 ADP mock that Chris Welsh put on. Vinny Pasquantino from the Royals. Your boy, Richie Palacios, I think is going to be a big riser next year. Kyle Storrs, and the guy we saw last, James Triantos, guy that's already raised the stock a good amount since the draft. I think he's going to be a big riser as well. Who are some guys you got?
Yeah, Palacios is one for me. I'm, you know, the hit tool is definitely there. He's got power developing as well, so that's a big one. Just going down the list, Kobe Mayo is one I think is going to really pop. He had a great year, a lot of power, so he's one that'll really jump. Triantos is another one that has flown way, way, way up for me. Wouldn't be surprised if Dylan Dingler, you look at the catchers that have really moved up, and I think Dingler's one that will continue to move up and show, you know, I think he's pretty solid all-around type guy. Jay Allen from this draft class has really, you know, had a great debut, and if that continues, obviously he'll soar up because we didn't expect the power, and he's always had the hit and speed aspect. Victor Acosta with San Diego, he's 17 years old and was dominating this year, so love to see that. Those are a couple that kind of pop to me. Jose Salas, DJ Hurst, a couple more. I know you said Salas, so pretty fun there. Yep. So those are two that could really move up. And there's a lot of names, man, that, you know, you look for the upside, and I look for the upside plus the hit tool. So you see the tools, and you also want to see the hit tool as well. So that's what I love about Palacios, is that he has the hit tool. And I'll go one more. A pitcher that has, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in the stats of the AFL, but with how good the hitter quality is there and how really, I'd say, bad the pitching's been.
I know where you're going with this.
Cole Henry.
If you only have a 401k, you're not getting the most for retirement.
Wait, what?
Add a Robinhood IRA on top, then they'll boost it by 3%.
You can do that?
And if you transfer in any retirement account, you get 3% on top of that.
Is there a limit to the match?
No limit. Robinhood Gold gets you the biggest contribution match of any IRA on the market. Sign up for Robinhood Gold at Robinhood.com/boost by April 30th. Subscription fees apply.
Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Match on transfers subject to additional terms and conditions. Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC.
Was that
I thought you were going Owen White.
Nope. Owen White's been really good too, but yeah,
Cole Henry's pretty good. Yeah,
I've always been a fan of Cole Henry, and he's looked highly, highly impressive. Dansby just hit a big bomb. It's 5-0 Atlanta, so I'm very happy. Awesome. So let's hope
five runs on three hits.
Yep. Let's hope we can continue this. So yeah, those are some prospects that I think can really rise up, and yeah, those are what we're looking for. So let's see. Looking at the first-year player draft this year, this is from Carl LaFlame on Twitter. Outside of the first round of this year's draft, who are the two or three players that you are most excited about?
I've already mentioned a couple of them. Lonnie White was a 64th overall pick, super high power speed. And then James Wood was 62nd. I think they've got two of the highest upsides in this draft, but obviously lower floors. I've been a big Christian Franklin guy, outfielder from Arkansas. Went to the Cubs, pick 123 in the fourth round. There's some strikeout concerns there, kind of hit tool questions, but nice power speed blend. Cubs have developed hitting prospects very well. With a lot of intrigue, like Zach Gailoff from Virginia, went second round, pick 60 to Oakland Athletics. I like him a good amount. Bubba Chandler is just another, toolsy guy that I think could. And then I like, some people are kind of down on him, but I like Justice Thompson. Maybe it's because I'm a North Carolina guy, but he went pick 180 to the Reds. So maybe it's a nice late round target. So I'd definitely be looking at him as well.
Yeah. Ben Coderna, obviously we got to see him.
Coderna, yeah.
Yep. So he was second rounder to the Royals. And obviously everybody's hype about Mazzucato. I mean, you got Coderna out there pumping 97 with good secondaries. And I think that's one to get excited about. Robert Gasser from the Padres. He went competitive balance B at 71 overall out of Houston. He was very, very dominant, has a good pitch mix. Detroit had a great draft again. People will look back, but I think that Dylan Smith, who actually followed at pick 74, is an intriguing guy there. He was dominant at Alabama, SEC level. So pretty excited about him. Jose Torres out of NC State. He was 89 overall to the Reds, had a great start to his career this year and always liked. And I'll go back to the Royals again. Their fourth round pitcher, Shane Panzini, who another guy who's really popping off this year. So a couple of those guys I think could really pop. And I'm excited to watch. There's a lot of fun names here. And you will continue to see this more and more as they continue to get more reps and we see them more and more. So that's fun. Good question there. Next question. What do the Braves do with Drew Waters and Christian Pache? So obviously we know Acuna will be back next year, and definitely by May. Hopefully he'll be back earlier. I have my hopes that, we look at guys and how they recover like pro athletes. I think he could be back before May. I'll be optimistic on that one. And then obviously they've got guys like they got this year with Soler, Rosario Duvall, Jock Pederson, Ozuna, who knows what happens there. There's a lot of question marks still. So how will their MLB development playing time be affected if they re-sign a couple of these guys? This is from Kellen Altman on Twitter. Obviously, I know he's a Braves fan as well. So, my man, let's hope we finish this out. It's interesting. Waters has regressed, I think. And maybe it's not even regression. It's just not meeting the expectations that we once thought. And so, he's really fallen out of favor. And I wish that the Braves would have traded Waters, personally. Like, the point when he was a top 20 prospect, like they really should have traded him and sold high there. But I think they were concerned too after we saw what happened with like the development of Austin Riley. We keep seeing these guys like develop and perform, and they just didn't want to do that because they had the expectations. And I'm not writing Waters off. Like I still think he can be a solid player all around, but I don't think he's ever going to be a stud. Pache's value comes pretty much strictly from his glove. Maybe the bat develops. I don't know. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it depends on what happens. There's a lot of questions with who they re-sign. And obviously, they're in strict win-now mode. And I think that gives pause for them to re-sign a couple of these guys. I think Jock has an option. I think that Duvall has an option as well with Soler and Rosario. Obviously, I'd love for them to re-sign Soler and Rosario. So we'll see what happens. But I do think, yeah, obviously Waters made a AAA in 2019. So that'd be interesting to see what happens with them. I don't know. I don't want them sitting on the bench at the major league level, but maybe they get traded. We'll have to see what happens there. Any additional thoughts?
Yeah, before I do, two quick things on the Braves here in this game. I just saw the Soler home run. My word, that was absolutely murdered.
Yeah, that was a tank.
Yeah, that was like maybe 546, not 446. I think was hammered. They showed when he crossed home plate after the home run, and I thought for a second I thought he was hugging the bat boy. It was Ozzie Albies. Like the size difference between Jorge Soler and Ozzie Albies, who's one of my favorite players in all baseball. This is kind of funny. But yeah, I think I'll go out and say this right now, go on the record. I don't think Drew Waters ever plays a game at the major league level for the Atlanta Braves. I think he's traded this offseason. Maybe for an arm. I'm not sure for what. They're pretty set offensively, so probably for an arm, I'd say. I think long-term, you're probably looking at, I think Pache will be up, though I still don't think he's going to be a great offensive guy. I think he'll be adequate enough with his defense. That's so valuable. So I think it'll be him, Acuna, and then probably one of the other guys we mentioned, Hort Soler, Ozuna, one of those guys in the other corner. So I think that'll be the outfield for the next several years for Atlanta. And I think Waters Castell. So yeah, I'm not high on Waters. I have dropped him way, way down my rankings. I think he's barely in my top 200 now. Let me look real quick. Yeah, he's 189 right now, and Pache is 191. So I'm not a fan. I don't see the bat ever progressing to anything that's going to be even close to impact level. I don't know if he's a long-term starter. Maybe he is on a bad team. Maybe I hate to pick on Kansas City. Maybe he goes like Kansas City and he's like, could be a starter there. But I don't see Drew Waters as like a starter on a playoff, World Series contending team. So, yeah, I think he gets dealt.
I could see, where Waters would be a good fit would be Cleveland. I could see him fitting there. They have no outfielders, and they really – I don't think they have any reasonable outfielders on the horizon unless I'm just, blanking on some of – they've got so many good middle infield prospects. I know they've got Stephen Kwan, which has really popped this year. Valera's a little bit further away, so it'd be interesting to see.
Maybe get one of their young arms.
Yeah,
get like an Allen or a Battenfield or a Xavion Curry, something like that.
Why not? I mean, worth a shot. Right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of still question marks on that one, but it's a good question to consider and ponder. So the next question comes from Matt Logan on Twitter. What's the projected timeline for Christian Hernandez of the Cubs? The Cubs seem to have a few too many shortstops, he adds. So is it likely that they will trade somebody or that he may change positions? I'll let you answer that one first.
I'll say it right now. Don't worry about it. Hernandez is like 4 years away, maybe five from the major league. He's 17 right now. He's at least a few years away. Love the talent. Like there's a reason why I had him inside of my top 50. A couple articles I just wrote about the fun ones about projecting the top fantasy prospects 2 years from now. He was in my top 15 in that second article. So definitely very high on him. But you see all these young, especially on the international market, you go look like any top international market list, whether it be on Pipeline, Baseball America, wherever it may be. It's like 2/3 of them are all shortstops. That's how it is. Like, playing baseball in high school or little league, like where's the best athlete go? If he's not pitching, he's at short. So they always move off, whether it's they move over to third, over to second, depending on the arm strength, out corner, outfield. There's a lot of variables there. We're seeing it with guys like Abrams and others. So I won't worry about position right now. What was the other part of that question?
With Hernandez, he just asked if they said they had a few too many shortstops. Is a trade likely or will someone change positions?
Yeah. I think it's just too early to worry about, them making trades. Like I said, these things have a way of working themselves out. Who knows? Even though I'm super high on Hernandez and he's shown the ability that he could be an impact bat at the highest level, who knows if he ever even makes it? Same with these other guys. The Cubs are a very, very talented organization right now with a lot of rising talent. Like you look at their, they have for middle infielders, Hernandez, Reginald Preciado, Ed Howard, James Triantos. So definitely have a lot of Yaishon Santana, Kevin Made. A lot of good, and that's just the middle infielders too. Not even the outfielders, which there are a bunch of as well. So, yeah, I think it's just too early to worry about that right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that Hernandez is extremely talented, and talent always wins out in the end. So he's going to find a spot to play regardless. And he had a follow up question as well about Jaren Duran. He said, "What should we expect from him next year? Will he even be on the MLB roster to begin the year?"
No. Obviously it'll depend on what Boston does this offseason and what Chaim Bloom and company do. But I envision if they go the way I think they're going to, I think he starts at AAA because I don't really see him starting as we already have Verdugo. I think we have Kike for at least next year. And then maybe we bring back Schwarber as well. So I don't really see, and then maybe JD. I know a couple of options there, so they're kind of in flux right now. But I think they're gonna give him some time to get right because he looked overmatched. He looked like the guy that I saw back in 2019 after he came up from high A to double A. He just looked overmatched. So I think they'll send him back to AAA beginning of the year, month or two. Let him get right. Let him get back to dominating like he was before he came up, and then bring him back up midseason. So that's kind of what I think.
Yeah, no, I think I highly agree with that. I think that the expectations probably got a little too high for him this year. Everybody wanted to come up and be the leadoff hitter the Red Sox so desperately needed down the stretch. But, right. Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be fine long term. I'm not expecting him to be elite, but yeah, I agree with everything you said. We got two more questions here. This next one was from Alex Wilt. He asked, realistically, what are the chances that prospects like Bobby Witt Jr., Brennan Davis, CJ Abrams, Julio Rodriguez, Nelvin Marte, et cetera, turn into legit top 20 players at the big league level? So, like for a redraft standpoint, like top 20 dynasty players, even. So you feel like prospects get a little overvalued because people just assume that they'll be immediate stars. Or are there any that could realistically do this, that become top 20 players?
Yeah, that's tough because, yeah, we definitely overvalue prospects. I'm definitely guilty of that more than many probably. But, you know, I look at just this group of guys in general. First off, I got a top 20 player. So we're talking one of this elite of the elite here that can more than likely do all five things well or four things incredibly well. And you look at this group here, the two that stand out the most here are obviously the guys are the number one, number two in my rankings, Witt and J-Rod, because Witt has the huge power speed blend, so good hit tool as well. J-Rod just has that elite floor with an elite ceiling as well. So, but if you can get a package where someone's already valuing these guys as like top 20, top 25 guys, which I think it's definitely could happen in trade right now, especially with both of them kind of inching nearer to their MLB debuts in 2022, I would do it because if you're going to lose that deal, you need Witt or JRR to hit like 95th percentile of their possible outcome. So, which they definitely could, and they look like studs, obviously, but I wouldn't be opposed because right now is one of those kind of times where I always might look to trade a guy like this if I do, because with them inching closer to their debuts, the hype and the value of them could be an all-time high right now. Obviously, you never know, but yeah, realistically, maybe you get one of these guys turning into a top 20. That's top 20 in all of baseball, not just like prospects. That's in all of baseball. So that's just really hard to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's tough. I 100% agree that prospects get overvalued. I think they're good trade chips for that reason. Last question from our friend Ian Swerka, who we got to hang out with a little bit at First Pitch, win some games with him. Good dude. So appreciate this question. This is actually a really hard question. So it's a good one to end on and wrap up with here. He says, I feel like we're not yet fully aware of how the utter weirdness of 2020 echoed in the 2021 performances, especially with younger players. So how are we handling this? Are there any free passes you're giving on poor performances like Alec Bohm, Jesus Luzardo, or Gavin Lux? It's tough. I think that's a really tough question to answer. But what are your thoughts? Like how do we, looking back, like a 60-game season, how do we value, especially with some of these younger guys?
Yeah, it's super tough. And I wouldn't say I'm giving any a free pass, but I'll say the leash is longer. I'm giving them a longer leash. I'll go that route. Because especially guys that are, you know, these guys are all top 25 prospects. And, you know, Lux was a top 10 and Luzardo was, you know, at least top 20 in a lot of prospect rankings. So I'll give them a longer leash just because of the talent that we saw throughout the minor leagues. But with 2020, and like I've talked about it before, like I interviewed Shane Baugh and Cody Hosey back at the beginning of the pandemic last year, and just even the top prospects, because there was like even before summer camp was like early July it started.
Yeah.
There was like that basically all of, you know, part of March, but then like all of April, May, and June, even the top guys didn't have, like, they were going back to their, you know, back to their hometowns. Like Hosey's from Indiana. You know, either going back to, and Baugh is from, I believe it was Texas. They're going back to their, you know, where they're from, playing at their high school fields or just in local gyms. It's like definitely not, you know, MLB level complexes for sure. So definitely just threw a monkey wrench and everything. We saw that resonated throughout all the levels, not just in the minors, major leagues as well. So yeah, definitely give them a longer leash. That's why I'm still in. On guys like Bohm, Lizardo, and Lux, maybe not quite to the level I was 12 months ago, as they all kind of had down-ish years this year. But I think all three are great buy lows. Like we saw with Bohm, even though the approach went kind of south from what we were used to from him in the minors, the quality of contact was still pretty good. Lizardo still has some good swing and miss stuff. Lux, maybe we just have to adjust expectations, but he still can be an above-average hitter at this level. I still believe that. So, yeah, I think all three are solid buy lows right now in Dynasty Leagues.
Yeah, I agree. And just to put it in perspective, like the first 60 games of this year, some crazy things that went on. Just looking at some of these guys, I mean, for instance, let's see, I had a couple. Kyle Tucker was hitting just 257 through 60 games. Sal Perez had just 14 home runs, which was actually a lot. But, you know, even still, like with how many he ended up with, Paul Goldschmidt was hitting 251 with 7 home runs through 60 games. There's all kind of crazy numbers and things that happen in that small sample. So, yeah, and beyond just the small sample is all the weirdness of it, too. You think about everything that went on last year and all the players dealt with. There's so many aspects that you have to think of. And so, yes, I do think that it's worth thinking about and considering. You can't give full passes. Like, we can't even give Lizardo a full pass on this year. You look, and it was just another poor year. Obviously finished strong. I hope that he'll bounce back and be fine, but – yeah, so I'm probably the lowest on Bohm out of all these, you know, level Lizardo long-term. I still think Lux. We saw Lux come on strong at the end of the year. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily giving free passes, but at the same time, like, we're not going to totally throw those to the side either. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think the weirdness of 2020 affected some people. I think it took some players longer to get going this year. And so it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see again next year. You know, we're keeping our fingers crossed. We'll have another full year next year with the CBA and all. So it'll be interesting to see how we look, how players look after a full 2021 and hopefully a full 2022. Well, that wraps us up. It's been a fun episode. The World Series is going on. The Braves are up 6-0 at this point. So I hope by the time you're listening, they finished it off. I'm celebrating the first World Series title since 95 when I was a year old. And again, we thank you for joining us. It's been an awesome episode. Anything you want to add to close us out?
Nah, just, yeah, I hope that by the time this hits everyone's earbuds, that you're in a World Series hangover, so to speak. let's hope they're up 6-0 here, bottom of the fifth. Fried still looks pretty good right now. Only given up a couple hits so far. Velocity has gone down a little bit from what I've seen here. It's more like 94, 95, but still looking pretty damn good. But yeah, thanks to everyone that submitted questions. I know we couldn't get to all of them, unfortunately, but if we didn't get to yours, we will answer it on Twitter for sure. And if we forget, give us a little gentle reminder, give us a little nudge. But yeah, that's going to wrap us up. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at EricCross04. Chris is at RotoClegg. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And of course, check out all of our written work at FantraxHQ.com or over on our Patreon. And join us again next week for more Dynasty and Prospect Talk. Until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.